Want to become an AI trailblazer in the product world? Pragmatic Institute's newest workshop, AI for Product Professionals, is your ticket to generative AI mastery. In this hands-on training, learn to master ChatGPT and prompt engineering to transform your product strategies, rapidly create content, optimize workflows, and make razor-sharp product decisions fueled by data. Don't just keep up with the AI revolution, lead it. Seats are limited. Enroll today at pragmaticinstitute.com/AI workshop.
Hello, and welcome to the Pragmatic Product Chat series, where we tackle the biggest challenges facing today's product management, product marketing, and other market and data-driven professionals with some of the best minds in the industry. I'm Rebecca Calajaris for Pragmatic Institute and your host for this episode. Today, we are thrilled to have on the show John McDonald. John is the founder of The Good, a digital experience optimization firm that has achieved results for some of the largest online brands, ones you definitely know, like Adobe and Nike, Xerox, The Economist, just to name a few. He is the author of 3 books on optimization, including his newest book, Behind the Click. And he really offers a lot of insights on the psychological principles around digital optimization, right? The why we do make the choices we make in design more than, you know, this is how we've always done it. And I think a really good understanding for all of us as we partner with designers to make the experiences of our products just even better. So welcome, John.
Thanks for having me today.
All right, John, I always like to start the show by kind of asking everyone their origin story, right? Like, how did you get where you are today? And why are you so very passionate about this digital experience idea?
Well, it really goes back to college. I dual majored in visual arts and computer science. So those were two departments who never spoke together. But really, I started out majoring just in computer science. And I was the student who would meet the requirements of all the programming, but then spend all my time on the user interface. And so I would just make sure that the user interface and the user experience were great. And one of my professors noticed that and said, you know what? You're good at the computer science stuff. You have a grasp on that. But this UI seems to be what you're passionate about. And I think we need to stoke that fire. How can we do that together? And suggested I go talk to the art department, who was just at the time, this is early 2000s, was just getting into digital art. Mm. And he said, you really need to know the tools behind this. And the best that we have right now is some digital art. And Flash was really just starting to come out as a major tool. So that transitioned into starting an early career in Flash and really, again, spending a lot of time on the user experience and the UI as much as on making sure that the web was functional. Some years later, I started The Good with the mission to remove all of the bad online experiences until only the good remain, which is how we have the name The Good. So I've been doing that for about 15 years now. As you mentioned, we've worked with some really great and privileged brands along the way. So fortunate to have that experience.
So as we've talked about, as product people, we work a lot with designers. And I know you have a healthy appreciation for product because I happen to now know that your wife is in product and in fact, a Pragmatic graduate. So we like that. But one of the things that we talk about, you know, we talk about designs and there's often tension between designers and product people. Part of that is roles and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just trying to understand, right? Some of the things that designers do to us product people feel like, I don't know, like we don't know why. They don't necessarily seem as logical or we don't understand the reason behind it. And often, as we all know in life, when we don't understand something, we kind of hold it a distance or we don't see the importance of it. And one of the things I find really interesting in your newest book is you really delve into why designers make certain choices. You know, it's not just because we say so, which is how it feels like sometimes on the receiving end. Like, oh, well, they said we have to make the button round, right? So I would love this to kind of like explore that a little bit more and help us understand what's driving some of these decisions.
Well, look, so The Good, we started out as a conversion optimization firm. So really it was all about removing those bad online experiences because if you do that for the consumer, they will convert at a higher rate. And so that was kind of my end to get the corporate world to buy off on making a better internet, right? Mm-hmm. There has to be a payoff for
in it
them.
For the money. So, yes.
Right. And so this industry, when we first started, there was no term of conversion optimization. Mm. We actually called it continual optimization at the time. It shortly thereafter, within 4 or 5 years, became a whole niche industry called conversion optimization. And there were 4 or 5 firms like ourselves focused on that exclusively. Now it's become somewhat of a commodity over the years, but I appreciate that people are out there trying to make a better experience in larger numbers. But having been in this for about 15 years, what I really realized was the more that we did to optimize conversion rates, the more we realized that to make those real lasting gains, we had to pull back further and really understand that the customer experience is more than just a conversion, right? And there's so many factors that really affect conversion that start before a customer even begins to think about purchasing from a brand. So every element of a brand's website really tells the consumer something new about what they do or do not want to work with you or buy from you. And it often confuses them enough to just make them look somewhere else. And there's all these psychological principles that brands don't really put enough thought into. They know, like you said, okay, well, the button color should be one thing, and then you should always have a clear CTA. And you know, there's a laundry list of these checklists out there that you can go find right now. And yeah, will they help improve your site? Most likely, right? However, you don't understand why you're doing that. And it really creates more tension because a lot of these checklists start to disagree with each other, right? And you're, which way do I go? Well, it really depends on who your consumers are, who's using your website and what they want. And the only way to really understand that is talk to them. And they're going to tell you, but you have to understand what they're thinking behind all of that. And that's really why I wrote Behind the Click, because my first couple of books were all about the tactics, right? My first book was called Stop Marketing, Start Selling. Because so many brands, once you got to their website, just continued to market at customers, right? And instead of stopping that and saying, what do you want? You're here. You made it here. My marketing has won. Now it's my website's job to sell, to help make sure that I am meeting your needs, basically by just saying, hey, you made it to my website. The marketing works. Now let's help understand if it's a good mutual fit. Okay. But brands don't often do that, especially e-commerce companies. They're really the worst at that. They continue to market and push. So once I kind of got off my soapbox about that, wrote a book about it, the next step was really why optimize? And what does that process of continual optimization look like? How do you get that customer data, both the qualitative and quantitative data, right? So tracking every click and movement, but also talking to customers about why they're making those decisions on your website. What do they wish was happening? What do they miss? So that second book was Opting Into Optimization. And that was all about why you should be optimizing your site and how to get the right data to do that. Now, I really wanted to turn it more to, okay, you know how to do all this, but why are you doing it? What's the point of understanding and talking to customers? What are you trying to get out of them? And that's really what Behind the Click is all about.
Ooh, there's a lot of interesting things to dig in there, right? I mean, from the very simple, hey, don't forget every way, every point that they interact with you is part of that experience, and stop thinking about it. It's just, you know, this part of the funnel we need to optimize, right? That whole brand piece. But then, you know, really understanding who your audience is and your market is, because their best practices that you should do is directly related to that, right?
Right.
And those kind of things related to who they are and what they're trying to accomplish.
Exactly. And consumers, when they get to your website, you have to understand that research says that people make 35,000 decisions a day.
Ooh, that's exhausting.
And it's exhausting, right? And most of them you don't even think about. They're just hardwired into the human brain to do certain things. So some are really big, like deciding to get a new job. Some are really small, like just choosing your outfit in the morning. Some are so small that your brain makes that decision for you without even realizing that you're making that decision. So our brains really have hardwired shortcuts throughout them to make these decisions as quickly and easily as possible. And that's what heuristics are really all about. And it's great because if we had to consciously choose every decision during the day, we'd never get out of bed. We'd just be exhausted nonstop. So that's a positive for humans, but it's really can be bad because your brain just searches for the easiest choice, not always the most logical. Right. So if you really want to understand more of these heuristics as a brand, you have to create the experiences that work with the way your customers' brains work. And understanding that is really going to be key. And if you can do that, you're going to make it as easy and simple for them to make the best decision and eliminate the obstacles that most brands don't even realize are keeping consumers from getting to that right choice.
So how do we do that? How do we go about really understanding the buyers in the customers?
Yeah. So really it's, again, all about understanding those psychological principles. Now, the best way to do that is to, first of all, talk to your consumers. Do that consumer research. And this can be as simple as taking your marketing website, your e-commerce website, your app even. And I like to do the coffee shop test. Just go to a coffee shop and walk up to somebody who's in line, who could be within your target market. You have to profile a little bit, but, you know, find somebody who you think might possibly be within your target market and say, hey, I'll buy your coffee if while you're waiting for it to be made, you answer a couple questions about this website for me. And never been turned down. Everybody wants a free coffee. They got time to spare while it's being made anyways. And you do a little bit of user testing, put the website in front of them and just say, hey, what do you think you should do here? Right? Or give them a task, find the right product for you here. And what you'll find is that they start talking out loud. Well, I really am looking to accomplish X, Y, and Z, but I can't figure out how to do that. Mm. And then you start digging deeper. Okay, well, tell me more about that. Well, I was looking for this bit of information. I can't find it. So instead I went over here. Now I'm down a whole nother path and I'm really frustrated because that's not what I'm trying to solve. And the more you start to see this as a really good example of this, we worked with a large printer manufacturing brand and we sat down and they said, hey, you know, we sell printers, but people tell us all the time they come back to our website and they're frustrated they can't purchase. And we want to understand why. And we said, okay, well, why are you making it hard to find toner for your printers? If, you know, so, well, we sell toner, but we're a printer company. And this is the way we've always done it. I said, okay, I'll come back in a week and we'll bring some evidence of what we think you should do, some research. So we went and we did some unmoderated user testing on their site and we recorded the video and audio and we took it and we clipped it up. And what we did is we kept showing consumers who were frustrated because they could not find the right toner for the printer they owned. They were trying to find the printer because couldn't find toner anywhere on the site. So they thought, oh, next logical step, I'll go to that printer's page and that will have links to the right toner. And they'd get to that printer page and it wouldn't tell you what toner you needed. So they were kind of left in the dark. And so what we did is we actually clipped all these videos together of people being really frustrated. And we put a little ticker down in the corner that was just like a cash register ticker. It just kept going up with the money that they were losing every time somebody was upset and leaving. And we went back to a couple of weeks later and we said, okay, let's watch this video together. And the empathy that created alone by saying, oh, wow, this is how frustrated people are on our site. We need to fix this. And then also speaking to the high level executives who were all about the money. Again, you got to show them what they're losing here. And that really showed empathy, but also, wow, we're leaving a lot of money on the table here by not solving this. And from that day forward, they were like, hey, bring the consumer data behind it and you can make whatever suggested changes you feel like you need to make here. And so bringing that empathy, again, understanding why customers were getting frustrated was the turning point for them.
I think the empathy is really important too. It's partly because I've worked in software my whole career, right? It's very easy to just like you hear something like, hey, someone couldn't figure out this. And everyone's like, well, those people are just idiots, right?
Yeah, right?
Or it just must be the noisy 20%. Or it's, you know, that can't be. But when you really see the evidence and you see that this is not a extra case or a one type of person, but that you see it there, it's harder to deny, right? And then when you tie that to the cost of the business by not listening to this problem, it gets really powerful.
I often tell brands that it's really hard to read the label from inside the jar. You are stuck. You know your product so well. You know your website so well. You know how to get all the information because chances are you wrote it or your team wrote it. Mm-hmm. You guys put the site together. So it's you have all the cheat codes. So as a consumer coming in who maybe they heard about your product because they did a Google search or it was recommended on one of the recommendation sites, or maybe their manager or boss told them, you got to go check this out and do some research on it. And they end up there and they can't see what you see. Mm-hmm. Right. And to them, they're just trying to get to their job done. They're trying to do two things on your website. They're trying to understand, can you help solve that pain or need that they have? And if you can, they want to convert as quickly and easily as possible and get on with their lives. And that's really it. They're not there to hang out. They're not there to waste a day doing research or be confused, right? They really want to get the information they need and get on with their lives. And so anything you can do to help facilitate that is really going to be key. But, you know, the only way to get out of that jar is to build a ladder and climb out. And the best way to do that is to talk to your consumers or hire a third party who really can come in and just tell you what they see straight up without sugarcoating it. And I think, unfortunately, you know, websites end up often under marketing. And that's where marketing wants to continue to market. That's their job. But that means talking at consumers instead of to them.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I can hear we've got lots of our audiences in B2B software. So right now, I guarantee you someone's listening going, well, it'd be really nice to be in B2C and be able to go to the coffee shop and know that you'll find users, right? And yeah, and it's a really way of distancing. But I know you have and can do this with B2B products in the same way.
Yes, we do this exactly. One of our great clients we've worked with a number of years is Adobe. And it's all we focus on with them is helping convert trials of Acrobat into subscribers. So we work with the digital document team, which is mainly Acrobat and digital tools. And it's B2B, right? It's all about how do you help people to understand what all of the benefits are that they're not using that would make their life easier. Because they came there because they have a PDF that they need to add some comments in or digitally sign, or, you know, they have a task at hand. Nobody's coming to Adobe's website buying Acrobat without a reason. They're there to download it because they want to get something done. So we want to help understand what is that task that you're trying to accomplish and how can you make that easier? Because if we make that super easy, you will convert from that free trial you downloaded into a subscriber. And so the same philosophy applies in the same steps. You go and find, you know, we did this test and we figured out one of the big user bases was actually parents who needed to sign stuff for kids for school or sports, and they were downloading Acrobat. And so there are often B2C people hidden within your B2B product that you also need to talk to.
Well, and the lines between expectations for B2B to B2C products, it's disappeared, right? We have to stop thinking that, oh, but when I put my business hat on, I'm okay with a bad interface or whatever, right? Like, no, I'm not. I'm really not.
They still have a job to get done and they're on your site to accomplish it. And then they want to get on with their lives. That philosophy will never change.
So with that in mind, right? The understanding that I want to go and talk to them. I want to understand the problem that they're solving because then I can show that I can help them with that. And then I make it quick. What are some other ways that your team and you help people think through that? Like,
right. So there's a lot of, again, qualitative data and quantitative data that we want to take a look at, right? So On the quantitative side, we would help people to understand what are all those click and movements that are happening on your site. So understanding that digital journey that people are taking, where are they dropping off in that process? Where are they spending a lot of time? Maybe you see one page in your flow that people are spending a lot more time on. That often signifies that they're confused, that they're having to read through things several times, right? You know, we do a lot of heat mapping, scroll mapping, eye tracking studies are really helpful because, well, you typically will follow your mouse cursor on a desktop with your eyes. So there's not, you know, usually it's pretty similar. but it doesn't tell you how much of that content people are reading. Mm. So eye tracking has become really great to help us understand, are they seeing it, but are they actually reading it? Mm. Right. And a lot of brands will put up walls of text. Mm-hmm. They'll go in, they'll just say, I'm going to tell you everything you need to know in this paragraph. Consumers are like, give me the bullet points. Like they start reading the first couple words and they're like, I'm not going to read that entire paragraph. And they scroll on. What happens with that is that they end up taking these mental shortcuts to make decisions. And you know what's going to happen is they're going to have things like choice overload, where they start sitting there thinking, oh man, there's a lot of decisions and a lot of information to be here. I'm so overwhelmed. I have too many options of where to go. Maybe you have 4 or 5 pricing plans. What package is right for me? And instead they just bail because they say, I don't have time for this right now. Or I'm overwhelmed. I have a meeting in 15 minutes. I'm never going to figure this out in 15 minutes. And they bail. You know, another one is like anchoring bias, right? Consumers come in and if they have a negative experience in that first couple of minutes on your site, they're going to have a negative brand perception, no matter what else you do. Hmm. And it's very hard to overturn that. So say your marketing website has an issue that makes it complicated for them. They finally get through that gauntlet, right? They get through the choice overload. They get through all these other issues. And then they sign up and they log in and you don't have a great onboarding journey, right? Instead, you just throw them right into the app and say, you know, good luck. Like you'll use it. Now they're overwhelmed again and they already have a negative perception. So they don't really want to spend the time to figure that out. So all of these really start before you've even converted somebody into a trial or a customer. Now, a lot of these also apply after, of course. Mm-hmm. You want to have retention and you want to have people who are engaged with your product. And there's a whole set of these that can be applied to inside the product as well. But it really starts before that conversion.
And I love the fact that what we're talking about is both, again, the combination of quantitative and qualitative, right? So it's the conversations, but then it's not just that. Like, don't, you know, there's so much data that we have and we can gather about how people are interacting that it's very good, very easy, or at least simple to go from, hey, I had some great in-depth conversations to now I have a lot of data that shows that this is an ongoing problem. And that what that helps do too is build the business case that we need to actually address this.
And I think that's important, is building the business case. As I mentioned with my story earlier, right? You got to build up that empathy. You need to help people understand why the consumer is right. There are so many unfortunate digital journeys that the brand or the company is saying, well, this is what we're trying to guide them to what we want them to do, right? They look at it as that funnel, or maybe they're even providing an onboarding flow, but they don't ask any questions up front. So they give them a generic onboarding flow. Mm-hmm. And that consumer's like, well, that's not, I'm never going to use that. That's not why I'm here. I'm here for this other part. Can I just get to what I want to do? And they start closing all of the onboarding things and it just gets frustrated. And then they, you know, instead of trying to figure it out and last through it, they divert. So I think it's really important to be thinking about this as something that you are continually optimizing, continually talking to your audience and finding these outside perspectives. And if you can do that and you can summarize those, then you start to see the patterns. And once you start to see those patterns, you really have a good understanding of why you're doing something. And if you can understand the psychological principles behind all of those, then you're even a further step ahead, because the vast majority of folks don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's super interesting too. We often have a trouble where we have so many features that we think are wonderful in our product that obviously before you buy and right after you buy, I should show you all of them. Right. You know, using our Adobe example, most of us use Acrobat. We know what we use it for on a regular basis, but also it does a lot more, right? But to your point, helping understand me and what I'm trying to accomplish means that you can sort of land and then expand, versus if you show me all these things, I think, well, I do not need that nuclear fly swatter to sign the permission slip for my team. Maybe there's another way.
Exactly. And this is where understanding as part of that onboarding journey, what the consumer is trying to do up front. So asking 1 or 2 quick questions to say, hey, you know, frame it as a positive for them. I'm going to ask you 1 or 2 quick questions, but it will make this a better experience for you. Okay, great. Yeah, I'm happy to do that for you. I'm happy to answer a couple questions. Now you're going to tell me more of what I want to accomplish, right? And I think too many brands will go directly to kind of a black hat strategy, if you will. And what happens is that they start to use these heuristics and they start to use some of this data to try to trick consumers into doing what they want them to do. And I think, instead of guiding them to the right choice for them, they're using these games to trick customers into buying something they don't want or don't need, or signing up for something they don't want or need. And when you do it in that way, it really creates a bad brand perception that you're going to continually try to trick them. And consumers see this right away anymore. It used to be where, you could easily get people to give up their email address by putting a pop-up up on the screen in a B2C sense. Now consumers get really frustrated when you do that because they're not ready to give you their info. And so I think, really focusing on why you're doing this and trying to always be helpful for the consumer is where it's at, as opposed to trying to get the consumer or coerce them into doing something you don't want them to do, right? So it can be, as a consumer, it can be really frustrating to be led down a path that I don't want to go. And as a brand, you can lose all of your brand equity very quickly by being told, we're going to give you a benefit here, and instead it's a negative.
I mean, there's nothing worse than when you want to buy something and you have the hardest time doing it. You're like, you are making it so hard for me to do business with you. And that is just, it's heartbreaking too. Like, you're just like, oh, this can't be what you wanted to do.
Well, how many like SaaS products have you gone to where you land on their homepage and you say, I don't understand what problem you're solving.
I don't know what you do.
Exactly. It's a lot of marketing jargon. It's a lot of really they're not niched down enough to solve a specific problem. So instead they try to solve everybody's problems. And you get there and you're like, I don't understand. What am I going to pay you for? How are you helping me day to day? And so then they end up trying to lead you down these paths. And that's where brands really get into these challenges of trying to trick people, if you will, using them in black hat, because they aren't disciplined enough to take a step back and alter that language to really help people to focus in one direction. And so many brands that we end up working with, what happens is that when we start talking to consumers more and more and doing that user testing, user research, we find out that they have two or three main things that they're trying to solve, but the brand isn't talking about those. And so really that helps on the marketing side, but then the onboarding flows, then even navigation within the app, all of that can be updated based on what consumers are trying to do.
And I think with the black hat thinking as well, like there is definitely, we forget the end goal and we get focused on little goals in between. Like, oh, if I get their name and their email, I can keep nurturing them. And I increase my lead count. And you're like, okay, but is that going to further the ultimate journey that you as an organization want? Or are you making a left turn? And I think we sometimes get so focused on those little pieces in between, or the ones that maybe are most connected to our group. Right. Same thing with a free trial. Like, we want to drive free trials because we ultimately want them to convert. If we build it the wrong way, I can get a lot of free trials for people who don't know how to use the product, aren't the right ones to use the product. And is that really ultimately serving the company the best?
Exactly. When you use these heuristics in a way that doesn't authentically market to the customer that you're trying to market to, you attract the wrong customers outside of that target market. You know, who are going to be unhappy no matter what with your product, right? Because they're not the right market. You're going to increase the abandonment rate. You're going to lose your retention. You're going to kill your customer sentiment, which means that if anything else goes wrong down the line, you have no goodwill to get through, right? So now people are canceling left and right because you brought the wrong people in, and the right people who made it through are unhappy no matter what. So you're just wasting time, money, and resources attracting and converting the wrong people.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
So one of the things that I think when we hear the tension points between designers and product teams, which always makes me sad, is this feeling of time, that it's great that designers want to go and do all this, but we don't have time for that. We need to move forward. Tell me why that is just a silly obstacle.
Well, again, you will waste your time doing it for the wrong people, right? So understanding why you are making these decisions is helpful to design, of course. But if you can communicate that properly to the product side as well, and then the product really grasps and understands why you are you're offering up these suggestions, and then everyone can get on the same page about that, you will move so much more quickly. Hmm. And this is a challenge that, you know, we get brought in to large organizations to solve challenges between design and product.
Yes.
All the time. They bring us in, and this happens more frequently than I probably should admit, but brands bring us in and they say, hey, we really want to chat with you about a new engagement. Can you fly down and meet with us? And sure, yeah, we'll come down. And we sit in a room and there's six or eight people there and they're on opposite sides of the table. And as soon as I walk in the room, I understand what's happening here. Mm. They are at a deadlock and they need a third party expert to come in and help them navigate which direction they should go. And so it's almost always, we think this is the best route. And they, one side of the table explains to our team why they think they're the right way. And the other side of the table says, oh, well, we understand that. But here's what's important based on the product we're building and why we want people to do this. We really want to try to get them to go down this path that we're aiming for. That's the future. And then it always ends with just staring at us. Which one's right? You know, like, what do you like? And it's like, well, doesn't matter what I think. Mm-hmm. It does not matter. What matters is what your consumers want. Mm-hmm. So have you guys gone out and talked to the consumers? Are you sure that's the route they want to take? And if there's a benefit to that future path that the product really wants to push down, have you talked to consumers about that future product and whether or not that's what they want in the direction they were willing to head? And 9 times out of 10, the bigger the company, the less of that they've actually done. Mm. Because there's always customer research on the team. But the point that gets lost along the way is turning that data into something that can be socialized throughout the company. Mm. They mm-hmm. always have the data, but it's in a spreadsheet somewhere, or it's in video clips that are an hour long of, you know, user testing. And instead of taking that and making it bite-sized, sociable stuff that you can get throughout the company to really have everybody understand on the product and on the marketing sides and design, then, you know, it really gets lost and it ends up wasting a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think, I mean, these projects don't have to be huge, right? I mean, they're large in terms of the impact. It doesn't mean we need to spend mm-hmm. 6 months doing nothing to get the answers. There's lots of ways to get quick signal on what we are doing and what we should be doing.
I agree with that completely. It is something that you should be able to, within a day of research, at least have an understanding of what direction you should keep going. And there's, like you said, there's so much data out there that most of these brands, it's not for a lack of data. It's not for a lack of having the researcher who actually is speaking to your customers. It is for a lack of making it bite-sized, sociable. Mm. Here's the key point. Here's what the trend is that I'm seeing. And that is really important to understand, what is that trend? What do you keep hearing time and time again? Once you have done that, usually people are more than welcome to get on board with your point of view.
Yeah. I think the other place sometimes we see a disconnect is one of the things we talk to product managers about all the time, right? Is to talking to the market and knowing what problems they're solving. And so we often feel like we understand, right? Like, we've done this. Mm-hmm. We totally agree. We talked to them and we just did some discovery. We did some validation and make sure they happen at a lot. But mm-hmm. I think sometimes we forget that we have an understanding, the level of fidelity, the level of zoom of the problem we're solving is big. Mm-hmm. And then in order to get there, there is many other bits of problems and discovery and prioritization along the way that is something that the designers really can bring to the table. And so when designers are like, but you don't know, we're like, but we do know, but we know here and they're talking about here. And just, it can feel like they're dismissing the research we have done. But instead, yes, it's like, that's great. We know the North Star, but let's figure out, like, well, how do they want to get to the North Star? Mm-hmm. Like, are they taking a plane or a train or a, yeah?
It's exactly where a lot of brands focus on that conversion point, mm-hmm. but they don't focus, whatever that conversion might be. It might be getting people to use a new portion of your app. It might be getting them to get through the onboarding or retention, right, is actually a conversion point if you think about it, right? Because they're making an active decision whether they want to stick with your product or not. And if you don't understand why they're trying to make those decisions and what's behind it, then you're going to lose them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So thinking about this, when you and your wife are having dinner and you're talking about how to make make the professions of product and design work better together. But no, but really, what as the product people listening, how can we better partner? How do we take this knowledge and understanding that you've talked about today and help us use that to make the experience and the partnership better?
I think that if everybody can get aligned behind the user, if you can get aligned behind the customer and what their goals are, and really, I keep using this word, but go back to the empathy for what they're trying to accomplish and the challenges that they have, because you're just one decision out of the 35,000 they're making every day. So if you can get aligned behind that, you will have a lot more success and a lot less of the challenges between the two sides, because it's not about what product wants. It's not about how marketing wants to say it or design wants to try to combine that marketing message with the product needs. It's really about what is going to be in the best interest of the consumer. What's in the best interest of our users? And if you, I promise you as a brand, if you serve your customers appropriately and you have a product that upholds the promises that you're making along that journey, you will have a thriving business. If you divert from that and you try to trick customers through Black Hat or use the psychological principles to really force them down a path that they don't want to go, then you're not going to have a lot of retention. You're going to have a lot of frustrated folks. So as a brand, the best way to align these two sides is to align them around the consumer. And that is what has worked really well. And I tell brands every time we sit down with them, again, it doesn't matter what we think. Mm-hmm. It really matters what your consumers think. And we're here to be the voice of the customer. We're not here to pick a side. I'm not here to say design, this is right, or product marketing, that's right. I'm here to help you to understand what that consumer is saying from a third party independent who does not have a side, and except for the consumers. And if we can help you understand what they want and that journey that they need to take to help them accomplish their goal, then everybody will win, I promise.
Well, and I think that that's, I mean, I think both sides really care about the users, right? And it's sometimes the language piece that gets in the way. But I also think it goes back to your first example that you talked about. We all care about the users, but, and we do, we all care about the users, we want to have a great experience, and that will deliver more revenue. And, you know, understanding the users, but not forgetting to build that through story as well, I think is another thing that we talk to designers about when we train them, is making sure that they can talk to the business implications of their design recommendations. Because otherwise it just sounds like, you know, it can sound like, well, they only care about the users, but not the business. That's not the case, right? Mm-hmm. One is connected to the other, and both sides continually making those connection points, I think helps us really see why caring about the user is, in fact, building the business and making the best revenue impact that we can make.
Exactly. So yeah, like you were saying, having the empathy, but also the ticker of how much money is being lost when you're so not smart. Serving their needs, the two of those combined talks to everybody.
Excellent. All right. We did talk a lot of different things today, and I know you already gave me one of yours, but I always ask people the two things that you would have people do differently tomorrow based on what we talked about today, what would that be? So we're going to align around the users, and what else?
Well, I think align around the users, and at the same time, have a good understanding of why consumers are taking these actions. So educate yourself on the fundamental principles of the psychology behind all these decisions. And by understanding your audience, you can use that knowledge to really help guide them to the best solution to their problem in the easiest, most effective way possible. And in turn, that's going to help your company reach your goals, and everybody will win.
Love that. All right, John, if people would like to learn more from you or read more about your book, where should we send them?
thegood.com. So thegood.com. And if you go to thegood.com/BTC for Behind the Click, we have a free chapter up there. You can get an early release, first chapter. And then when the book is released here in a few weeks, you will be able to purchase it there as well.
Awesome. All right, John, I appreciate the time. I know you're very busy because if you are trying to eliminate all bad experiences from the internet, you've got some more work to do. I'm just saying, make good progress.
15 years on and
but there's
still
more to
there.
Do. Yes. But I do really appreciate having you on today. It has been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That does it for today's episode. Thank you everyone for listening. And don't forget to join us next week when we tackle another great topic designed to help elevate your product, your company, and your career.